Kelly Pollack. That's
okay. We're just going to say thank you.
Oh. So polite. Kelly Pollack has been a national facilitator of Schools Attuned since 1997 and has developed and implemented curriculum for the Schools Attuned course and various other workshops on neurodevelopment. She received her master's in special education from Bank Street College of Education and taught for 4 years at the Churchill School in New York City. In Livingston, New Jersey, Kelly served as a middle school inclusion teacher prior to moving into mainstream classrooms where she taught from third through sixth grades. She was an adjunct professor at Bank Street and has been a private tutor for students with learning disabilities. Kelly is currently a field facilitator for Schools Attuned in New York City, helping teachers and administrators to implement the content of Schools Attuned in their classrooms and schools. Kelly is a returning presenter to Hidden Sparks Without Walls and will also be following up in the Diverse Learners Community of Practice, which you will hear about at the end of the call. I'm also delighted to introduce our technological facilitator, Betsy Kane, who will be working with Kelly. Welcome, Kelly and Betsy.
Well, thank you very much. This is Kelly, and I wanted to say good evening myself to everyone. And thanks for joining us for tonight's webinar, where many of you know we'll be discussing the way in which we communicate with children about their learning. And here, if we can go to the overview slide. Thank you. You'll see that we're going to be discussing communicating with children in really kind of two different aspects of that conversation that we would have. The first is how to work conversing with children about their learning into our daily practice. And then we'll move on to how to facilitate planned discussions about learning strengths and struggles. So really two aspects of talking to children about their learning strengths and struggles. And before we jump in, I wanted to just put out a challenge there to everybody. I know that there are a lot of people on the call tonight, but for as many of you as feel like you're ready for a risk tonight, if you can actually practice the language that we would use with children as we talk about the children that we'll be talking about. It's easy to say, well, I would explain that he's having troubles with his sequencing, but it's another story really getting that language together and actually talking to the student about it. Sometimes that's not as easy as it seems and needs some practice. So let's try to take risks in this area tonight and really try to get together that language as if we were really talking to students. So I just put out that challenge to you at the get-go. If we can move to the next slide, I wanted to start off this evening by having us think about, consider our own learning. There are lots of things, as I reflect on my own education, that I wish somewhere, somehow, a teacher would have shared with me about my learning. One of them off the top of my head is that I wish a teacher would have told me that I'm really wonderful at organizing a lot of things like ideas and writing and math work, but I am absolutely horrendous at organizing my materials. I hope that won't get in the way tonight. And I hope that at some point a teacher would have shared some strategies for organizing materials with me, because I still am at a loss sometimes for those strategies. Would anybody else like to weigh in? What do you wish a teacher would have shared with you somewhere along the way? This is where you can write in or call in.
This is Judith.
Judith.
I wish that my teachers would have helped me recognize that I have an interpretive skill that is, pretty valued and valuable in the world. Mm. And on the other hand, that they would have helped me understand how to organize my thoughts in a way that I could express them clearly so other people could understand what it is I'm talking about.
Okay. So often we learn about ourselves as learners, as adults, and then we reflect on our learning. But anybody else, anything that you, in hindsight, wish that a teacher would have shared with you? Even if we could get one more. Somebody take a risk. Get your voice heard.
Kelly?
Yes.
Hi, this is Julie Gordon.
Hi, Julie.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Thank God. For me, I think when I think back, I think more generally that teachers very often focus on my weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
And so my memory is of all the different things that I didn't do well in general. And it was really nobody really helped me even to figure out what my strengths were.
Okay.
I think that was a general sort of the feeling I have generally in the classrooms I was in when I was a kid.
Okay. Thanks, Julie, because it's important for us to keep in mind because as we talk about talking with students tonight, we will certainly be considering even starting off talking with children about their strengths and then moving on to being choosy about weaknesses and certainly not focus on the weaknesses. And really try to leverage those strengths because that really is, in the big scheme of things, what children who grow into be adults use in their careers and in their lives is their strengths. So we certainly won't neglect that tonight. What I'd like to do is, yes, one more.
I typed something in. This is Marcia, and I see somebody else also typed something in.
Yes, thank you.
I wish, of course, when I went to school, I don't know that people were thinking in these terms, but in today's thinking, I wish the teacher would have pointed out to a class in general that some people are auditory learners,
mm-hmm.
some people are visual learners, and, you know, to give the class a chance to think about which is their preferred way of learning or the way they learn better. Because it took me a long time to figure it out on my own.
Okay. Great. Thank you. And I thank you for pointing me out to the chat room as well. I missed those, so I appreciate that. But just to reiterate, the idea of really talking to whole classes about their learning and different learning styles and different learning approaches is a very valuable thing for us to be thinking about as we move along in our conversation tonight and in our practice. So I appreciate those comments. Thank you. Let's move on to the next slide. At heart, what is this all about? Obviously, we're talking tonight about helping children to understand and share how they learn. In addition to that, however, going a bit deeper, we're really talking about making connections with children through these conversations, forming relationships with both children and their parents or caregivers, facilitating ongoing open communication about learning, and by all means, celebrating children's strengths and valuing their differences. So really that's at heart, not just talking about helping children understand how they learn, but all of those really wonderful things. It's a tall order, but really talking with children in a meaningful way about their learning can be a very powerful and long-lasting impact on these children. So I wanted to get that out there, that it really is even deeper than just having those conversations. It's those long-lasting effects that we'll have. The next slide. We're going to be talking a lot about a student. It's a real student that I had when I was a fourth-grade teacher, and his name is Anthony. So I just wanted to give you an overview of this child before we jump in to learning more about him. He was a fourth grader at a public school in New Jersey when I had him. The best way I could describe him academically for you quickly is that he was a B student, and he had no support services of any kind. His strengths were many. He was strong at everything motor, particularly gross motor. There wasn't a sport that he couldn't play, and he was a competitive gymnast. He had a phenomenal active working memory for a fourth grader, and we'll talk about that in just a little while as well. He was very creative, particularly in his writing and his storytelling, and he had an abundance of energy and was very enthusiastic as a learner. The weaknesses that really stood out at the time that I had this first conversation with him, official conversation about his learning, were two, and they were both in the attention area. He had trouble pacing himself in many activities, and we'll learn more about that later. He just moved and thought and did pretty much everything too fast, and kind of coupled with that, he didn't self-monitor very well. So he would do things too quickly and then not catch mistakes that would have come out of moving too quickly. So those are some of the things that we're going to be focusing on with respect to Anthony tonight. The next slide tells us just a bit about Anthony's parents, because Anthony's parents were involved in the conversations we had, not all of them, but many of them, about his learning. They were wonderful people, very eager to learn about Anthony and about learning. However, they did not at the outset agree at all about what was going on with Anthony, which was very interesting. Mom was very certain that Anthony was struggling with attention, and Dad said basically he's an active boy, he's just a bit misunderstood. So some of the things that I need to keep focused on was how to keep us focused and our conversations focused on what we all see, what we observe, and not the differences in our interpretations of them. And then also to help Anthony's dad to understand his son's, what I was pretty confident were some attention-based difficulties. So that was kind of hovering above some of our conversations and things that I needed to keep in mind. Okay, next slide. And we're almost ready to really see Anthony in action. I just wanted to spend a minute with this idea, which is opening the door. In thinking about talking with children about their learning, one thing we need to consider is their starting point. What do they already know about their learning? Have there already been any conversations about their strengths and weaknesses? And how comfortable are they in hearing and talking about their learning? With the idea in mind that it's so much easier to talk with a child who is at least somewhat accustomed to the process of openness in talking about learning. So let me tell you where Anthony was coming from. One of the things that I really tried to enforce in my classroom was that we value differences of all kinds, cultural differences, learning differences and approaches, learning difficulties, learning strengths. And one thing, and it's what we'll start off with in the next slide, is what we call teachable moments, teachable moment conversations happening daily. So I want to start off with that idea of teachable moments on the next slide. Basically, teachable moments are the reasoning behind it is when you see something, say something. So in the course of your day, as you are observing students as they write and as they read aloud and problem solve, when you observe something noteworthy that you think the child could benefit from knowing, even if you're not exactly sure whether it's attention or memory or language, you would right there in the moment have a brief conversation about it, and then suggest a strategy the child might try out. So right there in the moment, when you see something, say something as an ongoing part of your practice. Okay? And I want to try out a couple of those with you that really happened. So if we can move to the next slide. This actually really happened with Anthony. It was a common occurrence for him. During read aloud, Anthony shared a comment without raising his hand that had no connection whatsoever to the text or the conversation that we were having. And this happened a lot. I don't know if you guys can connect with that either with your students or with yourselves. But the first question I had with you is, the first decision we need to make is, you want to talk to him about this, when would you do it? That's our first prompt. So somebody could either write in, and I'll promise to look at the chat room this time, or call in. When would you talk to him about this?
Hi, this is Megan.
Hi, Megan.
And I have several students like this. And
okay.
What I do immediately is I just kind of point at them and smile and say, you're calling out, and then they'll raise their hand, and
mm-hmm.
then I'll let them talk. And when they're off topic, I actually had this happen with a young lady beginning of the week, and I asked her, I said, you know, that was a great point, but I want you to think, does it have anything to do with what we're talking about right now?
Okay, great.
So.
Great. That's a great opening. So you would talk with him right there, right? And again, that goes into just having that openness about your classroom, about differences. If you didn't have that openness, right, that might embarrass a student. But if you have already kind of fostered that culture in your classroom where these are things that we talk about, then that would be a great thing to say right then and there. Is that, or you can even throw it out to the rest of the group, right? Let's talk about this. Is this on topic, right, with a little bit of humor? Because it does happen to all kids when perhaps their mind wanders or they think it's on topic, but it's not. Okay, that's a great opening line. Anybody else? when would you talk with him, or what would your opening line be? Okay, well, I can throw this out here. We certainly could talk to the student, as the last commenter said, right then and there. We could also just wait until the end of the read aloud and speak privately with the student as the rest of the students went off to do something else. And just to throw out a couple of other opening lines, you might say something like, you know, you said something very interesting, and I want to understand it. I'm not sure I understand where it came from. When you said such and such, what made you think of that? Or where did that thought come from? That might be some opening lines so that you are saying, gosh, that's so interesting. Boy, my teacher thinks what he said was interesting. And really it's your way to kind of probe a little bit and say, gosh, let me figure out where that comment is coming from. Okay? Is it a misunderstanding about the book? Right? Or is it perhaps an attention issue where the child was not attending or perhaps attending too much? Let me give you a sense. I did ask Anthony, I don't know what my exact words were, but I said something like, can you tell me what made you think of that? And let me tell you what he said. I said it seemed like I wasn't sure if it had anything to do with the topic. And he said, oh, no, it had something to do exactly with what you were reading, he said. The character was trying to figure out how to stop everybody from fighting. And I started to think about what I would do if I were him. And then I started to think about what I said to my sister yesterday when we were fighting and how I got in trouble for what I said. And so what I said when you were reading was, I can't play my DS game for 3 days and it's really not fair. Mm-hmm. So you see all of the different jumps that student made, right? What would you say next if the student said that to you? He's giving you a real clear response about how he got to that response that he made, right? What would you say to him? Just to review, the problem is he's kind of making great connections, but too many of them, right?
Maybe you could say to him, oh, now I understand where it came from,
mm-hmm.
but you didn't raise your hand and you weren't called on, so next time please raise your hand and then we can all hear what you were thinking.
Okay, so that would address the raising of the hand, the calling out thing. What about the other issue that he's making connections, but he's going so far away from the topic that the connections are then no longer really connected.
Right, they're only connected in his mind.
Yes, they're very connected in his mind, right? But when he says them out loud to everybody to say, gosh, I can't play my DS game, people are thinking, what does your DS game have to do with what we're talking about, right?
Yes. We have a comment in the chat room.
Okay. Wow. I really enjoyed learning about your flow of thinking. How nice. Wow. You're really validating the wonderful connections he's making. I really enjoyed learning about your flow of thinking. To give him some constructive feedback, I might also go so far as to say, it is so wonderful when you make connections when you're reading. I wish everybody that was listening were making the connections to our reading that you are. One thing you need to be careful about is not making so many connections that you're getting too far away from what's actually happening in the book. And then I might bring him back. Let's look at what you just said. Does your not playing DS games and the unfairness of that have anything to do with the character trying to figure out how to stop people from fighting? Okay? Anthony was able to see that after I pointed it out, but he didn't know that he was doing it. Okay? After you would point that out to him and go toward, boy, there's too many connections, just if we could get one or two strategies that you have used or could use for a student who does this sort of thinking, really almost overthinking and overconnecting. What's a strategy you could use for a fourth grader like that? Any ideas, either in the chat room or on the phone.
Kelly, this is Julie.
Hi, Julie.
Hi. Maybe I don't know enough about Anthony. Maybe this would work for him. But for some kids, I find if you're very concrete about the number of connections,
mm-hmm.
just to start with, that helps them to really manage it in the beginning. And then maybe with time, so you might say to him, if you think about two connections, maybe if you're,
mm-hmm.
because with more than that, he's getting far away from what you're
right.
talking about. And it gives him just a really concrete way to monitor himself.
Okay. That's great. You could also put a visual to that, almost like a web of some sort or a flow chart I'm envisioning to say we can go two, but no more. That's great. And then in the chat room we have, when he finds himself wondering or wandering maybe, he should try to track back how his thoughts develop until he gets back to the topic at hand. Yeah, that's wonderful. The tricky part of this one is it might be a few more conversations you need to have about this with him because it's so kind of it's an ingrained part of how his mind works. He's a jumper. You know, he kind of jumps around. So it may be that we need to point this out a few more times and have a few more conversations until he can kind of monitor himself a little bit better. But those are some great beginning strategies for us. Let's take a look at one more teachable moment. And this one, unfortunately, actually happened. There was one day that I had gotten stuck in traffic, and I walked into school just as the kids were entering. I was really frazzled. And within about 5 minutes, I had misplaced the attendance folder, my pen twice, and my lunch bag, and the kids were kind of giggling at me, again, a fourth grade class. Think about neurodevelopment, and first help me. What could be going on here? Why am I losing all of those things? I know you've been there. By the way, I was also thinking about the copies and whether I had all my copies done and the meeting that I had to get to at noon and what the schedule was like today and whether I took the chicken out for dinner.
Yep.
Okay.
You're trying to hold on.
Yeah. I'm trying to hold on to all those pieces, right? And we have another comment. I can't think about too many things at once, and that's for sure. Adrenaline, yes. But my adrenaline wasn't helping me keep track of my things, which is already a weakness of mine. Really, one of the things that I was working on here and not working on very well was my active working memory. I was trying to manage to think about and remember too many things at once, as the commenter said here. Now, all of the kids were already aware of this, but they don't know what's going on in my mind. This is a great time for a teachable moment. Very different than the one with Anthony. A teachable moment that has to do with me. How can I share what was going on with me, with my students? Any ideas?
Did you talk to this class in the past about memory and attention and things like that? Did you ever?
Yes.
Did they know about those?
They did to some extent. They we kind of skimmed the surface of attention, memory, and spatial ordering at this point in the year. This is kind of in October. So they didn't know a lot, but they had been introduced to it.
Yeah, I think it's a great way to teach them what active working memory is.
Mm-hmm.
Say, hey, you remember we were talking about memory. This is an example of one part of memory.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when you have to keep track of so many things at the same time, and so it's very hard to remember all the things that you need.
Right.
I think it's such a great example right there.
Yeah.
And it would illustrate it for them. I think that would be a great way to teach them about the idea.
Right. We also have a couple of comments in the chat room. I've definitely asked, have you ever been in such a hurry that you couldn't figure out what to do? Right? What a great thing. And it's a humorous thing. It's a nice invitation to talk about learning because it has to do with me, right? Ask students why they think it's happening. What a great idea. And probe until they get to active memory, even obviously if they don't have those words, right? You can give them those words. This is what we call active working memory. And this is what's happening to me right now. But see if they can kind of give some information about why they think it's happening. I right then and there, as they were giggling, did some of those things. I did use a visual as well. I put a big head, my head, my brain on the board with some curly hair, and I wrote in my brain, and I said to them, you can keep giggling if you want, but I want you to know why this is happening to me. And I wrote in all of the different things that I was trying to juggle in my mind at that time, and they just laughed. When I got to, did I take the chicken out for dinner, they thought it was all pretty funny. I did something further, though. I did take a few minutes to say, let's make a connection to them. Now, this is my active working memory. What's something that we do at school when you have to think about and remember lots of things at once, and it's hard for you to juggle all of those things? And really, it was just, again, it was kind of a teachable moment because, it was happening to me, but I brought it over to them. And they mentioned things like, when you make me do calendar math where I have to juggle all those numbers in my mind, that drives me crazy. And I said, gosh, now you know how I'm feeling this morning, right? But thanks for telling me. Now I know that that's not something that you like. Another student brought up writing. I just can't remember how to do all of those things at the same time. It just clouds my brain, that student said. So we can use our own learning as teachable moments as well. So when you see something either going really well or not going well with you, what a powerful thing to show students that not only are you a learner who struggles sometimes, but you can share it and be very open in talking about it. We're going to move on in the interest of time to away from teachable moments a little bit to the other kind of conversations that we can have with students. And I just call these more planned conversations. And really this is, this is when you have observed a student for a while, you've developed maybe some hunches, you have some things that you'd like the child to know about his learning in a bit of a more formal way than a teachable moment. And maybe you even have some questions or some things you need to find out from the student. So you sit down at a set time, maybe lunch or before or after school, to chat a little bit more formally, but I use the word formal very loosely because really one of the things you want to do is just make this very comfortable and inviting to the student. But let's just run down a quick to-do list, and then again we'll jump into Anthony and what this might look like for him. The first is to have a plan, to think before and to plan out what you'd like to bring up, and then to practice your language and to be very clear. If you can imagine just being an 8-year-old or a 10-year-old listening to a teacher talk about your learning, really make it as simple as possible and clear as possible. And by all means, consider the student. Think about the profile or what you know about the profile of that student. For example, if the child has attention weaknesses, don't talk for 45 minutes, right? Or if the child has motor strengths, I know an early childhood teacher who had a kind of planned conversation with a student and had him, it was a kindergartner, running around a baseball field finding his strengths or weaknesses at the different bases because this student just needed to move around and was very motor. Be flexible in your thinking about this. So I'm going to present this very linearly. Be creative in how you interpret it. By all means, include the student. It should be a two-way conversation where you're not only giving information, but you're genuinely listening and getting information from the student that will help guide you as a team. As much as you can, be creative and engaging so that this is an interesting thing for the student to learn, and I'll go into more of that in the next slide. And again, make it comfortable. Think about the location, maybe a snack or something that kind of bridges you and makes it comfy. Think about your tone of voice and your body language. Again, it should be very inviting. And then imagine what it's like to be him or her. Again, if a teacher talked to me when I was in fourth grade about my learning, boy, I would have been pretty nervous to sit down there. So just always keep in mind what that student might be thinking and feeling. And the next slide, I just want to throw out a few organizers that I have used that might be helpful for you. You can certainly use these or create your own. This is really just to organize the conversation and to keep it structured. Let's start with that basic T-chart. At the top would, in one column, be strengths or things I'm good at. The other could be weaknesses or things I'm working on. And you could write, as you talk to the student, the strengths down and have him or her draw a picture of it. For an older student, perhaps the student, him or herself, would write the strengths and weaknesses down and draw pictures. The little girl at the bottom is just an example of a few times, particularly with younger students, I would have something like that on a large piece of paper. And as we talked about, for example, if we talked about her kindness, we would place a heart near her heart and write the word kind, that she's very kind. Writing, you know, writing strength or weakness might go up near the child's hand, a motor strength or a strength in sports perhaps near the child's legs or feet. And I usually do it in two different colors, one for strengths and then one for the weakness that we're working on. So, again, just a way to guide the conversation. The other one was a baseball field, and I used this a couple times as well with kids who were, you know, really have an affinity for baseball, where I cut out some baseballs, and as we discussed strengths and the weakness that the child would work on, he or she would write the strengths and weaknesses on the baseballs and then put them around the field in different positions. Okay? And, again, this is good for a few reasons. It makes it fun and appealing. It provides a structure, and it gets the child involved in physically placing the strengths and weaknesses on an organizer. Okay, it gives them some, you know, kind of empowered empowerment there. Okay, we're almost up to Anthony on the next slide. And again, this is very linear. I just want to take you through the steps we're going to be talking about in the next half hour or so. The first is to remove any kind of stigma that the student might be feeling about the conversation or about learning differences in general. Then there's a discussion of strengths, a discussion of the weaker areas, obviously a discussion of strategies that the child is going to try out, and then a check for understanding to make sure that the message has gotten through and the child understands what's going on and what's expected of him or her. Okay. While we're doing all of that, we're going to be a good listener. We're going to be really developing that sense of teamwork with the student and his or her parents if they're part of the conversation. And throughout, we're going to be infusing hope that this is not a lost cause. We're going to get better at this, and this is something we can work on. It might take a little bit of time, but we're going to keep working at it until it gets better. And, of course, using strengths to infuse hope. Boy, you've got so many strengths that are going to be very useful to you in the future. So that's really our linear kind of format. But again, take it all in and be flexible in your thinking about it. Many early childhood teachers have said to me that they do all of these things, but they never do it all at once. This could be a series of short conversations if necessary, either because of age or development or attention or language issues. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about Anthony again. Let's go to the next slide. Because the first thing I want to do is remove any kind of stigma that student might be feeling sitting there across from me and perhaps as parents. My question to you is, how can we take the stigma out of these kinds of conversations? And again, think about the words you would use to normalize these kind of conversations, to normalize learning differences. What kinds of things do you say to students to take that stigma away?
This is Judith.
Mm-hmm.
You know, earlier you had talked about having a classroom that is open, so I would hope that before having these kinds of conversations,
mm-hmm.
it's something the whole class has talked about in terms of each of us having things that come easily to us or that we work at and enjoy, and there are other things that we have to work harder at and we don't feel so comfortable with.
Well,
that kind of language might already be out there, and you can kind of bring that into these more private conversations with students.
That's right. Well said. So just that idea that we all have strengths and weaknesses. We all learn differently. I oftentimes say something like, you know, you're such an interesting learner. I just wanted to take this time for you to help me understand a little bit more how your mind works, because I'm so interested in learning about some of the things that I see you doing. So just the idea of, you know, just giving them a pat on the back and, you know, being real about it, but I'm so interested in you as a learner, and I love to understand how kids learn. And here's another great example. I'm just using characters from stories as examples to open up those conversations. Thank you, Helen. Okay. We want to talk about strengths with Anthony first. Always good, and just think about yourself as a learner. We can go to the next slide now. If somebody were to talk about you, to you about your learning, wouldn't it be nice to hear about your strengths first? And even going back to Julie's experience in school, so important to talk and first to see if the student even knows what his or her strengths are. It's always interesting when you ask students what they feel good about in school or at home or what they feel strong in. So telling when a student says either I don't know or I don't have any. You really know you've got your work cut out for you, and that's really your first priority, is to find out what that student knows and perceives as their strength. Also interesting to see students who perceive a strength that you're not perceiving as a strength yet. So maybe there's something you're missing, or maybe the student is off in his or her thinking. Share as many as you know. Include the parent, if possible, to have them articulate a student's strength. That's very powerful, depending on the family dynamic there. Perhaps the student is good at entertaining their baby sister while the parent is making dinner, right? So important for the parent to say, I know there's some strengths about you as well. You can share personal connections, whether it's a strength that's similar to the student or one that's different. I might say, you know, you have such a beautiful singing voice, and I sing so badly I won't even sing to my dog. That's a difference in strengths that we have. I definitely don't have a strength in singing like you have. And again, be real and provide evidence so that it is genuine. And again, from Helen, they asked the parents to write a letter about their child before school starts so you can get a sense of where the parent is coming from, and that might give you some information about how to include the parent in this conversation as well. Okay. One other thing there in terms of strengths is sometimes I like to gently compare to other students in a nice way. Something like, I've never seen a fourth grader do gymnastics as well as you do. I've never had a student who competes in gymnastics, so that's kind of neat for me. Let's talk about Anthony in the next slide. And here's where I'm really... Okay. I think I had mentioned that one, unless I'm not seeing another one. That's okay. That's all right.
Asking the parents to write a letter?
Yep. Asking the parents, right, and they did that, and, yeah, that would definitely be used in this conversation to get a sense of where the parent's coming from. One of the things that I wanted Anthony to know about, I certainly talked about all of his strengths, but I figured we might work on his active working memory because that's a really huge strength of his. And here's my evidence. I've watched Anthony calculate and solve math problems in his head really well. Obviously, in terms of his motor skills, he can manage multiple mental and motor tasks in sports. So another example of active working memory. And he's a really confident writer, and he can really juggle all of those parts of writing. Okay. Let's pretend we're talking about Anthony for a little bit. How would you start a conversation or open up a conversation about strengths in general? What would your opening line be? Let's get some new speakers. Don't be shy. It's okay if you don't have all the language together.
Every person has strengths in things they're not as strong.
Okay.
I noticed that you are very strong at this and that.
Okay. Wonderful. So I've noticed that you're, you know, one of the things that you're really strong in, and with Anthony, because his language is very good, I would actually use the term active working memory. I think he would have loved that, and he would have appreciated that. It sounds very official. So as a person, he would have liked that. So I would say, let me just tell you a little bit about a strength that you have that you might not even know you have. I'll be curious to know. And I would start to describe active working memory to him. Has anybody had the experience of trying to explain active working memory to a student? Or can you imagine what you might say to describe that part of memory? can keep sharing, but I would love to know your ideas. Okay, I can share with you, and then by all means jump in if you'd like to. What I did with him was I used a visual of a juggler because I always think about active working memory as juggling lots of things at once, and I find that to be a nice visual for children. So I would use that. Boy, you're able to, in your mind, juggle lots of things at once. And Sandy has said, giving me an example of remembering telephone numbers. That's a good one, and one that I can do. And then I would go on to say, let me give you an idea of where I've seen you do this. I might even say to him at first, can you think of some times where you're good at juggling lots of things at once? Anthony went right to sports to say he can keep, and it was very descriptive in terms of playing soccer, as I recall, about all of the different things that he could manage all at once while he was playing soccer. So I would see what he knows about that. Does that mean I'm talking too much? So I would involve him here. And then I would share what I see. I would say, here's where I notice it. What I notice is you can remember and juggle so many things during our mental math time on the rug. You can even do it better than I can. And I would refer that I have talked to him about that I always have to write things down in math, but he doesn't. He can just juggle them in his head and solve pretty complex calculations and problem-solving activities in his head. So what a wonderful thing. And then I would go on to say, you're also great, as you mentioned, doing that in sports. You can think about where the other players are. You can remember the rules of the game. You can think about where your position is and where you need to be. You can preview what's going to happen with that ball depending on where the other position of the players are. You can manage all of that and really wind up in the right place at the right time, making the right plays. And then I would do the same with writing. I would review all of the different things that he can do all at once while he's writing. How would you include his parents in this conversation? Right? You're pointing out all the things that you see in school. Is there anything you want to know from them? How can we involve his parents here? Okay, so you might say, do you see this at home? Are there any examples you see at home similar to what I see in school where he's juggling lots of different things at once? Okay. Can anybody make a personal connection to active working memory, whether you have a similar strength or a weakness, that if you were talking to Anthony, you could say to him? It's a shy group. I shared with Anthony that I have a terrible active working memory when it comes to math, and he loved hearing that. But that I had similar active working memory strengths when it came to sports and writing, that was something I could really manage, that I was good in math as long as I wrote everything down, that there was just a little glitch in my brain that didn't allow me to manipulate numbers in my mind without writing them down. And he was actually very interested in that. The point being, if you can make those personal connections and feel comfortable sharing a bit about your learning, really goes a long way in kind of breaking down that wall that students feel sometimes between a teacher and a student. We're real. We're people and learners as well, and that's an important message to send. Okay. Let's move on to weaknesses. It's always nice and fun to talk about strengths. Weaknesses are a little bit harder. And just some general guidelines again. I only choose one at a time, unless they're very related to each other, and you'll see that with Anthony in just a minute. I can barely listen to one weakness of mine, let alone more than one at once. Again, just think about your language and plan that ahead about how you're going to explain it in child language. Visuals are very important here for, you know, if you're going to be talking about some complicated ideas in neurodevelopment, you'd want to provide a visual. Again, including the parents, seeing if it's the same or different at home. Obviously, including the student and what the student sees and feels. There are times where I allow the student to say, gosh, tell me something that you'd like to be working on. In Anthony's case, for this discussion, I brought this to the some ideas to the table. Again, sharing personal connections and providing evidence and tangibles so that the child can see exactly what you're talking about. That could be work samples or just anecdotes. And using analogies, we'll talk about a little bit as well. So let's go to the next slide and talk about Anthony. The weaknesses that I want to talk about with him are pacing, because as I said, everything's just kind of done at a frenetic pace. And because things are so fast, he also then had trouble self-monitoring. So he would make mistakes because he was going too fast and then not catch them. Some evidence. He's always the first one done, always, but with lots of careless mistakes, and he's very inconsistent. So he would get like two wrong, one right, two wrong, three right, that sort of thing. He would miss whole sections and pages of things, particularly on math tests. He was going so fast, sometimes he would just knock things and sometimes even some people over. He also had problems on the playground because his mouth was also going quite quickly, so he wasn't considering his words that he was using. However, in green, awesome pacing and monitoring in sports, particularly gymnastics. Okay? So I decided I really thought it was important to talk with him about his pacing issues. What's our opener? What are we going to, how are we going to open this conversation about weaknesses?
Maybe there's things that you need to work about to make those areas as strong as your strong areas.
Okay, so there are some things that we need to work on. We're all working on things, but boy, there are some things that we could probably improve upon and maybe, you know, get that up to the level of a strength, right? That'd be nice.
I would say that the school to learn, so mm-hmm. Now we can learn something new.
Great. Okay. Can you think of a visual that you might be able to use to explain the idea of pacing, moving too fast in his case?
From sports, maybe it's not a good idea, but you're not concentrating, you're moving too fast, you're missing exactly where to put the ball. I'm just making it up, but from sports, you take
okay.
from his field.
Yeah. I think making, and a few people in the chat room have said as well, really making that connection between his pacing and monitoring and gymnastics, I did that with him. I said, tell me, you be my coach. I'm doing gymnastics, and you have to help me. Tell me about pacing in gymnastics. And he actually was very interesting. He described to me in a floor routine how there are some times where you have to go really fast, like when you're doing something really hard and you need to take a running start and everything needs to be very, very quick. And he said some things, if you do them too quickly, you get points taken off. So stances or poses, for example, that you needed to hold. And I said, what a great, how insightful that is. You know, the same thing is true in school. There are some times where I say we've really got to move quickly, and then there are some times where we really need to take our time. And that's something that's very hard for you. You just like to move quickly all the time. And he agreed with that. That was something that he was, in fact, aware of. One thing that I did, I went through all of the different places where I see him moving too fast. I asked him if he could see them first. And he got a couple of them, but didn't really see all of the kind of implications where pacing came up in his life at school. So I rounded out that discussion and filled some of them in. And then I did pull in his parents here because this was really essential. This was one of the things that was at the heart of his attention issues. And I really needed them to understand as well. Can we move to the next slide so I can show you one way that I did that? I had a sheet that looked similar to this one there, and the parents were there when Anthony and I filled this out. I wanted him to get a sense of really what happens, what some of the implications were when he moved too quickly. So I gave him a few scenarios. What happens when you move too quickly on a math test? So he, and it was excellent at this. He said, I skip problems. I sometimes miss the whole page, and my grades stink, and I'm not getting the grades I'm supposed to, just as an example. And I said, great, I think you're right. When you go too fast, you're right. All of those things happen. How about when you move around the classroom too fast? He said, I bump things, and he said, I haven't done this, but I could hurt myself, or I could hurt other people, right? So it's really helping him to make those connections. And at the same time, really my ulterior motive was to use this to show Dad that Anthony's attention issues shouldn't really be dismissed. He actually said at one point, boys will be boys. And I needed him to know that this was a learning, a social, and a behavioral issue for Anthony, this frenetic pace, and that his pacing issues had implications that really extended into lots of areas. And I tell you, that's really what grabbed Dad's attention, for him to see that it wasn't just this frenetic pace. It really had implications across this child's life. It was really something that Dad was missing. So that was something. This is something I did pull into the conversation and included the parents in as well. That is, in general, the conversation that we had about his strengths and weaknesses. I see that we're getting a few minutes before the official end, and I would just ask for advice from my colleagues at Hidden Sparks if we can at least move on to strategies, and then I can refer to the slides at the end that might be helpful, if anybody would like to weigh in here. And I'd be happy to go longer. If you all would like to, I'd imagine we need about 10 minutes longer, and people are saying whatever works. Okay, so what I'd like to do is, some people might have to leave at 9 o'clock, and I appreciate you hanging in there and making comments and being active. And if you have to leave, you can just simply hang up. And if you can hang in there, I'd love for you to do that. That would be wonderful. We're going to take a look at strategies for Anthony in a little bit of a different way, a little bit more constructivist. So you have to participate at the end of this. This is kind of a dialogue on the next two pages that I'm going to quickly read through so you get a sense of what the conversation between Anthony and myself sounded like when we, after we talked about pacing, and then after, and we were ready to say, okay, now what are we going to do about these pacing issues? So I'm going to read this to you. This is not a perfect conversation, but it probably is what my conversation with him sounded like. And at the end, I'm going to ask you what you noticed, what you'd like to make a part of conversations that you have with students that you'd like to incorporate. Okay? So I'm just going to read it through. Okay? Now that we know what pacing is, Anthony, we need to think about what we can do to help you with it. Can you think of anything that might help you to go at the right speed? Not really. Well, that's okay. Mrs. Brown, do you have anything that has worked for you at home? Well, sometimes I just put up a T sign for, like, take your time, you're going too fast, and that slows him down a bit. No way. I don't want anyone doing that here. Well, what about if we use the speedometer card in a similar way? This was something I had talked to him about. I had made a picture, a visual of the speedometer and how it goes either way too fast or way too slow. I can keep it, and if I see that you're going way too fast, I can just go near you and show it to you, that's so no one else sees. And it would be kind of like this, and I did it right as he was sitting there. How does that sound? Yeah, that's fine. Anthony, if you had to pick one of the areas on this sheet that we talked about, which one would you want to work on first? definitely my math, because I could get, like, at least in the 90s on, like, everything in math, but now I'm getting, like, in the 70s for, like, no reason at all. All right, well, that makes sense to me, because I know how frustrating that must be for you. I have a couple of suggestions for you and those math tests. Let's take a look at your last math test again. Let me get it out. Remember that we talked about this right here, and I would show him, where there are, like, 8 problems that are the same, and you get some of them right and some of them wrong? Yeah, and I know how to do all of them. It's just, like, so hard to focus on all of them. And then I guess I go too fast, and I don't know what happens after that. And then the next slide. That is a great description, and that really is helpful for me to hear. So I was thinking, why don't you take your test like your mind works? Do 2 or 3 of this section, then 2 or 3 of the next section, and kind of bounce around your test. Cool. You think it'll work? I don't know. Let's try it out on Thursday's quiz and find out. And if not, I'll give you a retake. Okay. Anthony, I have one other suggestion for you. You know how you always hand in your paper in first a lot? Well, I was thinking that if you handed your paper in 10 minutes early, that I would give you those 10 minutes later in the day to check it and make corrections if you have to. How does that sound? Great. Good. So, listen, I think we've got 2 good strategies to start us off with the math tests. Do you remember what they are? Yep. Bounce around the sections and check it later. Great, Anthony. And you know what? Maybe when you check it later, you could also do it in a different color so that we can see if you were able to catch any mistakes. And that'll tell us if that strategy is working for you. Yeah, okay, cool. And that's where we would end. What did you notice? What are some strategies that you might incorporate? Or you can even say something that you might do differently or not say or not do. Let me go to the next slide for this one.
Turn, he had to turn, you had to turn, he had to turn.
Okay.
And that was terrific. And I also think you gave specific strategies to say, okay, we're going to try these 2 ideas, and then we'll come back and check and see how it went.
Okay.
So I thought those were terrific.
Okay. And Helen also said, I'm making him part of the solution.
And I love the idea that you're working with the way his mind works.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He was almost surprised when you said, you know, you can bounce around the test. He's like, really?
Yeah.
You know, that gives him permission to use. That's, you're sort of saying the way your mind works can be used to your advantage,
mm-hmm.
or it can work through the situation. Let's just figure out how to bring them together instead of trying to force him to think in a totally different way.
Okay.
But it was organic to his strengths,
mm-hmm.
and the things he needed to work on, and you were giving him that language as well, you know, helping him understand how his brain works.
Okay. It was interesting. One thing that I noticed after he used that particular strategy was that it absolutely worked and worked very quickly. It really fit him. So we were lucky here because, you know, sometimes the strategies don't work and you have to kind of go back to the drawing board. But we were lucky with this one. And not only did he do that, but he was able to explain to me, it was fascinating, that there were times within longer problem-solving tasks on a test where he would start solving a problem and then realize that he needed to make a switch. He would go do a few other problems and then come back to it. And I said, that is fascinating to me. You didn't lose where you were in the problem. You didn't have to kind of start from the beginning. And he said, no, he was able to just jump right back into the problem. And I just thought that was fascinating.
Wow.
He also chose something to work on that he knew he had strengths in.
Yeah.
And he felt that those weaknesses were holding him back,
mm-hmm.
from realizing his potential.
Mm-hmm. It also fit because in 4th grade at this particular school was the first time that the kids received letter grades. And this was in the beginning of the year as he first started getting things that said 75% at the top of it. And that was really a big transition for all of the children. But particularly for a child like that who saw in a very concrete way that he was not I hate the word potential, but he was not living up to what he knew he could do, and that was terribly frustrating for him in an academic sense, where he knew that he knew was able to do all of these problems, and then to have that 75%, for example, was terribly frustrating to him and his parents. So it made sense to him that he would make that a priority.
I also think it's good flexibility in adapting your expectations of him to what his capabilities were. In other words, not being so strict about, well, you have to take the test one way. No, why don't we try this? Why don't we try checking? Why don't we try doing something so that you could build on his strengths rather than just force him into a preconceived idea of how it should be done.
Okay. I always make sure that I come to the table with some strategies in mind that I think would be helpful. Oftentimes I'll give, particularly with a fourth grader, I'll say, what do you think about that? Will that work? And sometimes right then and there it needs to be tweaked, you know, like when he said there is no way anyone's holding up a T and telling me that I'm off topic or something like that, or I'm going too fast. So, you know, sometimes they need to be tweaked to say, okay, maybe we could do this. However, we'll do it in such and such a way. So sometimes those conversations need to be worked out. How, you know, would this work for you? Can you think of a way that this would work for you? And then also, is there anything that you felt has worked for you or hasn't worked for you? Maybe the child has tried out strategies that you need to hear about, you know, whether they worked or not.
I have a question.
Sure.
I think these are all great things that we're talking about and important for so many students, and I see how it can work very well in a self-contained classroom.
Mm-hmm.
I teach middle school.
Right.
Every 40 minutes for eight periods a day, I have, you know, between 15 and 20 new kids.
Right.
We do not really have time in between periods. You know, there's like 2 minutes that they have to get
mm-hmm.
to class.
Right.
You know, and in 45 minutes,
right.
It's very hard to take time out to have a conversation like this with one child.
Right.
You know, while the others
yep.
are doing something else, whatever.
I hear
and
you.
I only have a half hour for lunch.
Yep.
I cannot give up my lunch time to have a conversation like this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And after school, they leave right away to get on a bus. We can't hold them, you know, after school to, you know, to chat with them. Everybody.
Right.
That last period bell rings, and they're out of there in 30 seconds.
Okay. All right. I've got a couple of ideas. The first one is to, again, maybe the idea of teachable moments would be easier for you because those conversations occur more quickly. And they're just, you know, inherently more succinct and to the point. So that might be. The other thing is, one thing that I did when I was working in middle school, I think I have some more time than you did, but if at all possible, and it sounds like you don't, but I would do literally just 10-minute conversations at lunch, and I would invite kids, you know, I would kind of prioritize the kids who needed to have those conversations the most, and just kind of touch base to say, we centered it around goals. Are there some goals that you're working on? What's a goal that you're working on in the next week or so that I can be part of, that I can help you with? And right then and there in those 10 minutes, we talked about some strategies that they could use to achieve that goal. The other thing that I used in middle school was journal writing, so that I would jot down an idea that I had. You know, I'm noticing this. Is this something that you're interested in working on? And I would just put it in a few sentences to the student, give it to him on a Friday afternoon. They have the weekend to think of it. You know, give me something, you know, tell me what you think on Monday morning. Hand in your journal and respond to that, because we had that kind of journal going back and forth anyway. So journal writing would be another way. Not to say to replace the one-on-one in all situations, but at least it gives you a start and a way to communicate. That might work with your schedule more.
Thank you. Okay, we don't have journals. I do math and science, and we don't
You could start a journal, though. I mean, it could be something that you start. And again, this isn't going to be with all 100 students that you have, right? This might be something where you say, who do I need to get to first, right? Who really needs my attention right now? And just simply start with that student. Start with whatever's comfortable for you. Maybe you just give it a try and see how it works with one student. Maybe a student who you think would go for it, right? Maybe a writer who you think would kind of be amenable to that kind of strategy and talking back and forth through writing. And give it a shot and see how it works.
Thank you.
Okay, sure. And again, in the interest of time, I'm going to point out a few of the last slides just for you to think about. I know a lot of you came with groups from your school, so perhaps this can be a conversation that you have in the next few days. The next piece is just how to work in the idea on the next slide of teamwork. And what can we say or do to communicate with Anthony and his parents or any student? The importance of working as a team. And again, anytime you can connect with sports, it's a natural connection, or being even part of a choir or an orchestra to make those analogies of, what makes working as a team so worthy of our efforts. And to point out, we are a team, and I need to do my part in the team. You need to do your part, and Mom and Dad need to do their parts. And if any of us kind of don't do our part, that whatever we've agreed on in this conversation, then we're not working as a team, and that's really important to this process. And again, making connections to sports and that sort of thing are always helpful. And then the last piece is really infusing hope and optimism into the entire conversation, not just stuck at the end. I didn't mean it to sound like that, but really, how do we send the message that things are going to get better, that there's hope, that their strengths are really where their strengths can lead in their lives, particularly with older students, even talking as far as careers and that sort of thing, to say, you know what, sometimes school is just the hardest part of life because you've got to be good at so many different things. But you've got some niches of strengths that are really going to take you far. And to point that out so that there is that feeling of it's going to be okay, I just need to get through this. For some students, that's really an essential, and some parents, they really need to hear that. There's hope. A few other last slides is just if you're working with students who are either younger or older, just to consider, hopefully some of what we've talked about tonight will be applicable to you without much change, but there will be some tweaking that needs to be done for younger students and older students. And by the way, in a webinar that we'll talk about in just a second coming up on November 16th, I believe, we'll be working with a younger student who's a six-year-old and really kind of deepening our understanding of talking with children. And then just the final slide is just thinking about how you communicate most effectively before jumping into a conversation like this. What do you know about your own learning that might influence your ability to communicate with a student? Like, for example, in case you haven't noticed, I've been talking for the last hour and 15 minutes. I could talk and talk and talk. And when I first started talking with students, I talked way too much and didn't really involve the students as well as I should have. So that's just something that I've learned along the way. I literally write questions in to make sure that I ask them because it's just my style and something that I know about my own profile that I need to keep in mind. And then finally, Helene has said that she has a questionnaire that she asks her kindergarten children before parent-teacher conferences, and that she shared it, what I'm good at and what I would want to do better. And I would just say that is wonderful for kindergarten. That is wonderful as far up as the kids will do it for you. I would just really encourage just that simple kind of T-chart, what I'm good at and what I want to do better at, really has the kids thinking metacognitively. And then, of course, as the kids get older, and how am I going to get there? What do I need from my teacher? What do I need to do in order to do better, to achieve that goal? I would add that for older students as well. Thank you so much for your time and your attention tonight. And I know that I was talking very fast sometimes, and I hope it wasn't too fast. And I appreciate everybody that was involved in the conversation tonight. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Kelly, thank you so much. That was such a fantastic session. I feel like you've given me so many practical tools that I can use in talking with students and with other teachers in positive ways to understand all of our learning styles better. If people are interested in continuing this conversation on November 16th, there will be a COP, Deepening Our Understanding of the Demystification Process, and Kelly will be leading that. This will help you get more tools and think more deeply about this very important area. And in order to register or get more information, you can contact Sandy Miller Jacob. And all of her contact information is on the PowerPoint, and it's you can email her at cop.dl.smj@gmail.com, or you can call her at 617-559-8615. And again, that's on November 16th. Kelly will be leading another session, a COP similar to this. And another upcoming event will be the next webinar on Tuesday, December 1st with Dr. Judah Weller, CREA, Developing an Effective Management Plan for Building CREA Skills. And again, that's a webinar, and you can sign up for that at hiddensparks.org, and that will be December 1st. In addition, everyone should have received the questionnaire or the evaluation in their emails. I want to ask you again to send them back so that we can get your feedback and continue planning and incorporating your feedback into plans. Now, people, if they would like to continue speaking, we will leave the phone lines open. It will not be recorded any longer. And this session will be up on the website within the next 24 hours, and people can access it to listen online or, again, to have it as a podcast. Thank you again to Kelly and to Betsy for facilitating this so beautifully, and I hope that everyone enjoyed.